You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Chris Nichols. There's been some big shakeups in the race for California governor. Last Friday, Lieutenant Governor Eleni Kounoulakis announced she's dropping out of the crowded field of candidates. This comes after former Vice President Kamala Harris announced earlier she would also not seek the governor's office in 2026. But Kounoulakis is not leaving next year's election entirely. She's announced her new focus, running for the state treasurer's office instead. To help us break down the implications of these moves and what they mean for the candidates in these various statewide races, we're joined now by Dustin Gardner. He's the author of Politico's California Playbook. Dustin, welcome back to Insight.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So before we get started, we had the lieutenant governor on Insight back in April. I want to play a little bit from what she said at that time about running for governor.
I've been running for 2 years. I'm the a uniquely qualified candidate in that I was a housing developer here in Sacramento for 20 years. I built master plan communities in our family business. I was president of our business. Then I became a diplomat, which again is, I think, a skill that's maybe useful in these current times. And for the last almost seven years, I've served as California's lieutenant governor, which is a great place to train and get ready to be governor. So I'm ready to serve. I'm hoping that I'll be able to have the kind of campaign that will appeal to California voters. But at the end of the day, we are in a very challenging time right now with the federal government. And I think people just want to get back to basics of being able to have a good job, and have that job, be able to put a roof over their family's head and food on the table, have politicians who are maybe come with the kind of experience I do, which is not just in the political realm, but in the practical realm, to be able to help them address some of the challenges that they're living with in their everyday lives. And to me, that's really just about rolling up your sleeves.
So, Dustin, Lieutenant Governor Kounoulakis, as she said at the top there, she had been running for governor for more than 2 years. Did the news last week about her dropping out come as a surprise to you?
You know, I have to say I wasn't surprised. She was in the race for an incredibly long period. She got in, I think it was the late spring of 2023. She was the first major candidate. But Kounoulakis, you know, had not really taken off in the polling. She was among the top pack of Democrats, but consistently often in probably around fourth or third place in a lot of the polling. And we had reported as early as March that she was considering the treasurer's race as a backup option. And Kounoulakis started having those conversations with her allies in Sacramento and San Francisco as Kamala Harris, the former vice president, was looking at running for governor. But even though Harris isn't in the race, Katie Porter, Javier Becerra, a couple other prominent Democrats have pulled ahead of Kounoulakis in many of the surveys. And so I think that was part of her thinking. And she was really building, you know, the groundwork for this move to look at the treasurer's race for several months. So really, really not a surprise here as she looked at kind of the bigger landscape in this very competitive governor's race.
Now, I know we're going to talk about Kounoulakis a little bit more as she looks to that other race, the treasurer's race, but let's stay with the governor's race for just one moment. Now that she's out, who are the front runners among the Democratic candidates?
Well, I mentioned Katie Porter, the former congresswoman from Orange County. She really is the front runner at this point. The polling, most polling has her pretty significantly ahead of the rest of the field. She's shown that she's able to raise money very quickly out of the gate. She's only been in the race for a little over 4 months, and she's already over $3 million. That said, there is a very crowded, competitive field of Democrats. You have Javier Becerra, the former Health and Human Services Secretary during the Biden administration. You have Antonia Villaraigosa, the former Los Angeles mayor, former Speaker of the Assembly. You also have Tony Atkins, the former state Senate president. So it's a very broad field at this point. But at the moment, really, Katie Porter is kind of running the race. And it's really a question of who is her biggest challenger. And I think that's what we're waiting to see in this next phase of the race.
Well, and speaking of challengers, who are some of the more prominent Republican candidates vying for governor? And do any of them pose a significant challenge to Porter?
So you have Steve Hilton, the former Fox News personality. He's consistently pulling the best on the Republican side. And you have to remember, Republicans typically are taking that number two spot in California's top two primary. So regardless of who the Republican is, there's very likely to be a Republican in the November runoff. So I mentioned Hilton. Another big player you have is Chad Bianco, the Riverside County Sheriff. They are the two most well-known Republicans. And then another contender that's being discussed that hasn't gotten into the race is a former Republican, now Democrat, Rick Caruso, the Los Angeles area developer, the mall developer. He used to be a Republican, used to be an independent, and then switched to Democrat a couple years ago when he was running for LA mayor. He's considering running, and he has a tremendous amount of wealth. He's worth well over $5 billion. And so if he got into the race, he could be another very serious contender, considering his ability to self-finance.
You know, one more question about Katie Porter, frontrunner, as you mentioned. Your most recent playbook this morning reported that Porter is attracting the biggest campaign donations from Silicon Valley. How much are we talking about, and what's her relationship like with the tech industry?
So she's drawn a couple max $39,000 donations from major tech figures like Chris Larson, the Ripple CEO. Ripple's a big cryptocurrency company. There's a couple other prominent CEOs that have maxed out to her with that $39,000 contribution. And this is really comes as a surprise because Katie Porter, when she ran for state Senate last year, a race that she ultimately lost to Adam Schiff, she was not liked by much of Silicon Valley, in particular the cryptocurrency industry. Porter in the past has been very critical of cryptocurrencies and, you know, the need for government regulation to clamp down on the industry. But that was Katie Porter in the past, and we've seen an evolution in recent months as she was preparing to run for governor, and then now that she's been in the race, where she's been making the rounds, meeting with a lot of people who opposed her in that Senate primary, and, you know, trying to make nice with big Silicon Valley leaders, big business leaders. And it seems to be working, at least in some quarters, where these people who were not fans of Katie Porter just a year ago are now maxing out donations to her campaign, which is a pretty remarkable shift.
Dustin, going back to where we started a moment ago with Lieutenant Governor Kunalakis, why do you think she decided to switch specifically over to the treasurer's race? And do you know how long she's been considering this?
Yeah, I mentioned earlier that we had reporting saying that she was talking about this as early as March. And, you know, given those were the well-known conversations she was having in Sacramento, it's likely she was considering it even earlier than that. And that all came as she struggled to gain traction in the polling and the race. But what she said late last week is that as she studied the treasurer's position, part of what appealed to her was the ability to focus on affordable housing. You know, Eleni Kunalakis comes from a family of developers, a family that's well known in the Sacramento area. Her father, Angelo Tokopoulos, he's a very well-known developer, and she helped run her family's company for over 20 years, building a lot of master planned communities in the Sacramento area. And so, you know, the lieutenant governor said that she was looking at that, and what really appealed to her, one of the main things, was the ability to focus on making sure the state is leveraging as much money as possible to build affordable government subsidized housing. So that was one area. And she also talked about making sure the state is investing as much of its public money as possible in things like developing infrastructure and clean energy projects. You know, all of that said, this position, the treasurer's office, this is someone who oversees the state's investments. It's basically the state's investment portfolio manager. It's often seen as a stepping stone. And, you know, Kunalakis has run out the clock of how long she can be lieutenant governor. She wanted to run for governor, and that wasn't in the cards. She wasn't gaining traction. So this also gives her a place to wait until she decides her next career move. Potentially, she can be treasurer for two terms, and then she could look at, you know, maybe she might want to run for governor again or run for some other higher office in California.
Right. It could keep her very relevant politically here at the Capitol here
exactly.
In Sacramento. Dustin, so who are the other candidates in that treasurer's race? And would you say that Kunalakis has become the front runner?
Without question, she is the front runner, just given the amount of money she has. She has already raised $9 million between two campaign accounts. It's unclear exactly how much of that can be transferred to the treasurer's race because there are lower contribution limits in that contest. But her campaign says the vast majority of that $9 million can transfer over, which gives her just an incredible advantage. The other well-known candidate is Anna Caballero, who the state senator. She's currently the Appropriations Committee chair in the state Senate. She has a lot less money in the bank, but she's well known and she's got big connections in the labor world. So she's most likely to be Eleni Kounalakis's major competition. The third major contender was Libby Schaff, former Oakland mayor. She actually got out of the race on Friday and endorsed Kounalakis, which is, I think, another factor that just speaks to the strength that the lieutenant governor brings to this down ballot race out of the gate. And there are some early signs that Anna Caballero is preparing to take shots at Kounalakis. There might be some tension between the two of them. I'll have some more reporting on that in tomorrow's California Playbook. But from the outset, it looks like Kounalakis has a lot of advantages going into this race.
Well, we will definitely be watching for that. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dustin Gardner from Politico about changes to the 2026 governor's race, as well as other statewide office campaigns across California. Dustin, we've talked about the races for governor and treasurer. There are other statewide positions up for grabs in 2026. How are those races shaping up? Is there anything that stands out?
The broad trend that really stands out to me is just how competitive so many of these down ballot statewide races are in California. Traditionally, the governor's race is the big show, and you get less attention for some of these other statewide positions that just have, frankly, fewer duties and that are lesser known to voters. But this cycle is shaping up to be different. There's quite a few well-known folks running for major positions. First, I'll talk about the lieutenant governor's race. Kounalakis, as we mentioned, is the current lieutenant governor. She's moving on. Hopefully, she hopes to be the next treasurer. But those running to replace her, there's a pretty large field. You have current state treasurer Fiona Ma is looking to move up to lieutenant governor. You also have Michael Tubbs, the former mayor of Stockton, who's a well-known activist who's campaigned across the country for universal basic income programs. And then you have Josh Friday, who's a little bit lesser known. He's the former mayor of Novato, and he's currently the chief service officer in Gavin Newsom's administration. He runs the governor's programs for volunteers. And he recently got into the race, but has had some pretty strong fundraising. So those three in the lieutenant governor's race, that's shaping up to be a pretty competitive contest. Perhaps the most competitive could be the superintendent of public instruction race. Former Speaker Anthony Rendon recently jumped into that contest. And you also have two well-known lawmakers in that race. You have former State Senator Josh Newman, who was the education chair in the Senate. And you also have Al Marzucci, the education chair in the Assembly. They are in there with Rendon. And so the superintendent's race could be especially competitive. And it's interesting to watch because this is, really a comeback attempt for Anthony Rendon. Folks might remember when he was Assembly Speaker, he was ousted by now Speaker Robert Rivas in a very protracted, ugly leadership battle that went on for about a year and a half. And now that Rendon's been out of public office for a little while, he's trying to tap into his old connections with former lawmakers and his connections to a lot of the labor union world as he runs for superintendent and tries to make a statewide come back and to, return to Sacramento.
Yeah, Dustin, let's stay for just a moment on former Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon, and then I want to ask you a little bit about these positions, sort of what they actually do and why people should care. But with former Speaker Rendon, why do you think he's interested in getting back involved in state politics? Why is he looking at this particular job?
He when he got into the race a couple weeks back, he really talked about just wanting to make sure the state follows through on some of the programs that he helped to create as speaker. And one of those is transitional kindergarten, universal kindergarten through the state. And he also talked about the fact that he has a young daughter. His daughter is preparing to enter kindergarten, and he wants to make sure the school system is working well as she pursues her education. And let's not forget, Anthony Rendon is incredibly close to the labor movement in California, especially CTA, the teachers union. Those groups, including other teachers unions, have been a big part of his coalition in the past. And I think, you know, he saw this race. There was a lot of competition in some of the other statewide down ballot races, and he saw a big opening here to get, you know, be a labor champion as the superintendent of schools. So I think for all those reasons, that seemed like a logical next step for Anthony Rendon. He had looked at running for treasurer or a couple other positions, but this seemed like the one that his heart was most in, and one where he could be a labor champion in the way he has often been in his career.
So, state superintendent of public instruction, what does that role actually do? What does that person do at the state? How much influence do they have over education in California?
Well, you know, it's more limited than a comparable superintendent in other states. California doesn't have the sort of the massive centralized school districts that you have in other parts of the country. School districts here are very localized and decentralized. But at the same time, the superintendent does have a very important regulatory and oversight role to ensure that districts, including public school districts, as well as charter school districts, are implementing the state's mandatory curriculum, that they're following mandatory state standards. So things like, you know, whether there's new graduation requirements or what is the statewide curriculum for the new ethnic studies course that many districts are requiring. These are things that the superintendent's office plays a big hand in regulating and has that oversight role in making sure that districts are implementing the curriculum that the state creates.
And then finally, the lieutenant governor's office, the candidates again, Josh Friday, Michael Tubbs, Fiona Ma. If one of them is elected to that role, what would they actually do? And what political significance could that be for their careers?
The primary role for the lieutenant governor is to be the governor in waiting. I mean, anytime the governor leaves the state, this person is stepping in to act as governor, or if the governor should leave office early, which isn't unheard of, then this person would step in. And you have to remember, this was the stepping stone for Gavin Newsom between him being San Francisco mayor and then eventually becoming governor. He was, you know, the governor in waiting for two terms. So that really is the primary duty, is being, you know, the backstop to the governor whenever he or she leaves the state. Beyond that, you know, the lieutenant governor serves on different commissions, the biggest being the regents for the state's university systems. But that the primary duty is really the day-to-day. And traditionally, this job really is seen as the stepping stone for a lot of people that want to be governor or run for some other major statewide position, either Senate or Congress. And that is traditionally the focus of the job.
Well, Dustin, thank you as always for joining us here on Insight.
Thank you for having me.
Dustin Gardner is the co-author of Politico's California Playbook. We've been getting up to speed on the latest changes to the runs for California governor, state treasurer, and other offices ahead of the 2026 election. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Chris Nichols. We're back in just a moment.